What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
We are welcoming the amazing Kat Howard, author of An Unkindness of Magicians and A Sleight of Shadows, to the podcast today on I Should Be Writing Season 19, Episode 19. So, hi there. Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers and anybody else who wants a creative career. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. I've been podcasting since 04. I've been traditionally publishing since 13. And my most recent book is Station Eternity, which was out last October. It is Jessica Fletcher meets Babylon 5. So, yeah, that's, I always feel weird doing this, but I figure if I'm giving writing advice, I should say my credentials. I don't know. But I welcome Kat Howard to the show today. How are you, Kat?
I'm doing really well. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
I'm a big fan. I read Roses and Rot when it came out, and An Unkindness of Magicians, so it's really exciting to have A Sleight of Shadows out.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, before we get down to the interview, though, we do a little bit of housekeeping at the beginning, talk about what we've been up to. I did not write a lot while I was traveling, but I did get some writing done this week on my weird, what did I call it? Red Shirts meets Hallmark Christmas movies story. So that's been
nice.
Working. That's been going along, and I'm pretty happy with that. I'm also taking a comedy screenwriting class, which is helping me think about the ensemble cast of a comedy, whether it's screenwriting or not, and helping me put this together. So that's cool. And Kat, are you in all PR mode right now, or are you working on anything draft one or two?
I am poking at a recalcitrant draft of my next book, mostly because I need a break from all PR mode. Mm-hmm. So I am trying to work my way into that. I tend to be one of those writers who is really superstitious about talking about works in progress, but right now it is a heap of words, and someday it will be novel shaped.
Yeah, it's a risk you take. But I had a moment once where I was on stage with Kim Stanley Robinson, and we were talking about AI, and I was stumbling along as best I could, not qualified to be on that stage at all, at all. But at the end, they asked us what we were working on, and Kim Stanley Robinson said, "I'm right." You know, this is obviously not a quote, but he's like, "I'm writing a Kim Stanley Robinson book," which means it's heavy on the science and heavy on the climate stuff, and it's about ethics and really interesting in-depth stuff. And I'm like, "I'm writing Murder, She Wrote meets Babylon 5," and everybody in the audience looked really interested, and that was gratifying. Because you don't want to follow Kim Stanley Robinson when he's talking about his works in progress. You just don't.
No, I would not either. I would be like,
yeah,
I wrote a sentence once.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Neil Gaiman liked your sentence.
So maybe there was something going for it?
That's true. So we'll do good news real quick, because I haven't done a live I Should Be Writing in a couple of weeks. So our team rejection count is at 103. If anybody has any good news you want to tell us in the chat, feel free. If you have good news and you're listening later, feel free to email me, mightymer@gmail.com, and I will list your good news in the next episode. Daniel has 3 rejections, 2 reports since last time. Congrats, Daniel. That's amazing. Where's the yay button? It's been so long. There it is. Nope, the A button not working? Ugh, lies. I have to manually do this? Things work. Kat, since you're not looking at the stream, there's confetti falling now.
Excellent, I was going to say, we could do like a cheer.
Yay, okay, so 3 for Daniel. Congratulations. You are a working writer, Daniel. Kat, what was your rejection experience like getting started?
Oh, well, my favorite day, and by favorite, I mean the time that I wanted to eat, like, not only a pint of Ben & Jerry's, but all of the ice cream in the grocery store, was getting 3 rejections in one day once. That really felt like an excessive number of them. I eventually sold all 3 of those stories, though, so, you know, I think it's important. For me, it was really important to have a list of here are the venues that I would like to hit, and here is the order for each of these stories that I think they might work, because, you know, not every story works for every market, and so I made myself just, you know, you read it over, you make sure you don't want to change anything, and you send it back out, and for me, that was how I got through the rejection heavy end of the career, because, you know, and it's not like it stopped now, but it's just, that was my personal way of dealing with it and just really saying, okay, this is a thing that happens in the business. I want to be in this business. I'm going to need to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. We also have Under Pope, 1 rejection. Congratulations, Under Pope. And Gwenega has 2 rejections and 1 sale of poetry. That's amazing. Congratulations. Nice. We do have an acceptance button, too. That's good. Congratulations, Gwen. That's great. I'll say my good news is that we really thought something bad had gone wrong with the dog's plate. After they do the knee surgery, they put a plate over the bone so it can heal. Now they thought that something went wrong with the plate. So we had to wait the weekend to get her x-rayed, and she seems... whatever happened with her leg last week has pretty much resolved itself. The x-ray came out pretty okay. So she's doing great. She was allowed some off-leash time in the backyard for the first time in 7.5 months. And
awesome.
She immediately got into trouble, which is great. I don't want to go into too much detail, but, you know, There are little critters who have noticed that the dog is on a leash, even in the backyard, for the past 7.5 months. They got a little complacent. So, but boy, she's happy right now. So that's my good news. Doggo seems to be doing pretty good overall, which is very rare. Kat, your book comes out in 1 week, a little less than 1 week. Is there any other good news you'd like to share?
It comes out on Tuesday. I feel like that's pretty much the focus of the good news is, hey, I did this thing and it's actually going to be in the world for people to read on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Kimmy, my good news is getting my taxes done and not owing as much as I feared. I did have that too as well. That was a very shocking, shocking happiness. So hope everybody in the U.S. got through tax day mostly unscathed. But we'll get started. Kat, you have, I just realized I don't read a lot of stories like you write, and yet I can't get enough of yours. It's like, you do, you know, would you call it Roses and Rye, would you call that fairy tale retelling or fairy tale inspired? Or, I don't want to start all the way back at the very beginning, but I really liked that book, so we're gonna, even though I just said we're not. So,
no,
you talk.
And it's a delight for me to find people who like that book. I would say more folktale, just because I have this weird academic background, and so I get overly specific about things. Tamlin is a ballad, not a fairy tale. But it's full of fairies, so maybe it's a fairy tale.
It's a tale of fairies. It's not a fairy tale.
There we go. We'll just be as hair-splitting as possible. A lot of my work deals with retellings of fairy tale folklore mythology, though. Just because I sort of like looking for... I like looking for the cracks or the pressure points in existing stories and seeing what happens if I push on them, or what happens if I use that crack in the story to look at the story from a different perspective, focus on a different character, a different theme, something that I was unhappy with in the original resolution of the story, something I think might be interesting for me, because those old stories that we've told often and in very different forms all the time have existed for so long, because we know them, they have this sort of resonance that's really interesting for me to play with as a writer too, because a lot of times it means that I'm dealing with an audience who already sort of knows at least part of what they can expect to have go on. And so choosing to work with or against those expectations becomes another tool of storytelling for me. And it's fun and interesting for me to engage with that.
Can you give me any specifics about what you mean about finding the cracks and pushing on them?
So for example, one of the short stories that I've written, The Green Knight's Wife, that tends to be one that people have read if they've read any of my short fiction, is a short story retelling of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight from the perspective of the Green Knight's wife, who, if you know the poem or you saw the movie or anything else, you know, sort of plays an important role in the challenge that Gawain goes through at the end of the story. She's instructed to sort of see what she can get out of him, to trade kisses. And by kisses, I mean something very euphemistic as the poem goes on. And she's not named. Like a lot of the people in a lot of the women in these stories, she's not named. She's somebody's wife. She's somebody's mother. She's somebody's child kind of thing. And that's her identity. And I was just like, well, that sucks. Who would she be if this was her story? How would mm-hmm. she tell it? And so that was sort of a way of saying, okay, let's pull this character out and see what happens if she's the focus. How would she tell this story? You know, there's still some of the recognizable elements. There's still some beheading that happens.
Well, I mean, you got to keep the beheading. Whenever there's beheading, that's not really something you cut.
I mean, it's hard not to like that.
I mean, you can cut sexism or racism or you know, a lot of the bad stuff that goes into stories, but beheadings.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely don't need racist stories, but we do need more stories where people get their heads chopped off.
Exactly. Exactly. So moving a little bit forward, then you did mm-hmm. An Unkindness of Magicians in, was that 2018?
17, I think.
17. And then now you're coming out with the sequel, Sleight of Shadows. So tell us a little bit about that world.
So the world, the Unseen World, which is a duology, this is done, there is no ongoing series, is set in a world that is very like our own modern day New York City, recognizable landmarks and everything else, except there is a secret hidden enclave of magicians, very wealthy, very powerful magicians in New York City. And Unkindness of Magicians starts out with this thing called the Turning, which is sort of a magical duel to the death for power and prestige in this world that happens usually about once every generation. This time it's happening a little early. And so the first book deals with that and what happens, the ramifications, and sort of all the nasty little secrets that come crawling out of the woodwork in the course of the Turning. A Sleight of Shadows picks up very, very close in time to the end of An Unkindness of Magicians, about 6 weeks or a little less than 6 weeks in calendar time after the end of the previous book, and deals with the fallout, because there is always fallout when there's great change.
So I guess I've written two sequels and I still am not really sure how to do them. So I was curious on how you approach the sequel, especially with the number of years between the two books.
It right now it's on the list of things I never plan to do again.
Oh, wow. Wait or do another sequel?
Do another sequel. Unkindness of Magicians was written as a standalone. I really thought that that was going to be one and done. I had planned for it to be that. It was not sold as part of a series or anything like that. And as I was writing it, I really liked the main character. I really liked writing Sydney. I kind of felt bad for the way I left her at the end of the book, but again, I thought I was out. And then when I was discussing next books with my editor, at that point, we had gotten some early reader feedback, and some people were saying, you know, I'd read some more. Is there a sequel? And I brought it up, and he'd say, well, I'd buy a sequel. And I thought, I like to sell books.
yeah.
So
helps you eat.
Yeah. You know, the cats won't get jobs. And so I said, sure. And it was really, really difficult. Partially because I had this finished book already. And so I couldn't do any of the tricks that I usually do when I'm writing, which is go back and put in the stuff in the beginning that I'm going to need for the end, or,
yes,
you know, or change or revise or anything. It was there. It was set. I had done it. I had done this thing to myself. I had no one else to blame. And so that was a little bit tricky. And, you know, some weird things have happened in the past 6 years that affected writing. Like, at one point, there was a draft of this book. The early plan for the sequel was going to involve a magical plague happening in New York City.
Oh.
And I got to a finished draft about the time that an actual plague was happening in New York City. And I thought, I can't write this book. I can't write and publish this book. I don't even want to live in this world, and I'm the one writing it. And so it was, you know, that was done. There is no plague in this book. There's no hint of that anymore. But that, yeah, there was some significant real world interference here. And so it just wound up being more complicated than I thought. And so I feel like from now, I'm just going to concentrate on self-contained stories, not sprawling ones.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I'm amazed that you're not the first author I've heard of who said they were working on something regarding a plague and were immediately could not continue with it,
yeah,
after, you know, March 2020 and subsequent years.
Yeah.
And then some people, you know, I edit short fiction along with Valerie Valdez, who's in the chat. Hello, Valerie. The Kids Are Asleep is here. I believe also praising Roses and Rot.
And another University of Miami person.
Yes. And, you know, we've seen an increase in some plague stories. And I'm just amazed at who wanted to lean into that and who wanted to actively step away. And I'm not, you know, judging either person. It's just how different people. I know some people, Brandon Sanderson, who took the isolation and change in lifestyle and just decided to write. And other people like me couldn't put a word down. And then when I tried to put a word down, it was terrible. It was rough. Guinega in chat says, I started writing a misogynist dystopia and then Trump got elected and I had to put that aside. I'll drink to that. It's just water, but I wish it was stronger.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a, well, this is interesting in a I wish I weren't living through it sort of way. Mm-hmm. The ways people have dealt with either leaning in or leaning out of current events in the past few years in terms of what they engage with in their art is very, very interesting. And I wish we were not having that particular interesting facet of our lives, but here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how to ask this question properly. I guess I'm only asking this because I, as a writer, I think I know what I'm trying to say because I know how I felt about what I've created in the past couple of years. How do you feel about this book? I mean, you've changed it. It was written during the pandemic. How do you, and I'm not saying how good is it. I'm saying how do you feel about the project that you have put forth?
At this point, I feel pretty good about it. I feel like I have written that I needed to write. I feel like I have done justice to my characters, which was the major thing for me getting back into the world too. That was the other complication, was every time I got started, I was like, no, this is the story that I'm telling that I think people want to hear. This isn't the story that the story needs to be. But I think I have actually gotten to the point of, no, this is the right thing. This just does justice to my characters and my story. I am proud of the book that I have. I am also glad that I did not plan for this to be an ongoing series or anything else. You know, I've been joking in interviews that, oh, Sydney really needs a vacation. And I mean, she does. I have put this poor character through a lot, but I kind of need a vacation from this world and to be working on something else also. So,
yeah. So you're done with Sydney and the New York Magicians.
You know, it's you know, it's one of those, as soon as I say never, I'm going to wake up 3 weeks from now with an idea. And so I'm not,
yes.
I'm not saying never because I know, you know, it's like, don't eat the fairy food. I know how not to do that at this point. But I have no immediate or long-term plans at this point to return to this world and characters.
Right. I mean, you could write, you know, Sydney goes on vacation. That might be a nice little escapism. You know, where the worst thing that happens is they, you know, she might be allergic to pineapple and they bring her a pineapple in her drink. What does she do? Conflict,
somebody's going to die.
There's going to be another beheading and it's going to involve pineapples. I don't know. I just think sometimes it would be fun just to take your characters and just give them a nice Saturday afternoon. So you have experience writing in comics as well, and it's one of those weird things where I didn't realize you wrote a comic that I was a big fan of like 10 years ago or so. And are you still doing comics, or have you moved away from that? Where do you stand in that genre?
I was one of the writers who was part of the Sandman Universe reboot. And I wrote mine was a reboot. The others were mostly new titles. And so I wrote about the first 18 issues, in Books of Magic, which is the story of Tim Hunter, who is a teenage magician in England. He has an owl. He doesn't have transphobia.
Yay. Thank you.
And that was great. First of all, I loved the Sandman comics. I think they're amazing. And so being asked to write in that world it's funny to say dream come true in that particular thing, but it really was a dream come true. And it was an amazing experience. I got to work with a terrific artist, Tom Fowler, who just made everything I thought of a million times cooler on the page. And that was a blast. And those, you know, it is not currently an ongoing series, but would I love to go back to comics at some point? Absolutely. I don't have anything active right now. I don't have a pitch in the back of my head for, okay, let's see if I could do this. But it's just one of those, I had so much fun working in the medium and I really liked the collaborative aspect of it. So it's definitely something that, you know, if a project came up that I thought was really great, or if I had a good idea to pitch, I'd absolutely do that.
Here's where I'm actually showing my ignorance. Would you know where to pitch? I guess you already have comic connections. I've just been wondering if all literary agents are supposed to be... There's so many writers going into... so many fiction writers going into comics now. N.K. Jemisin, Saladin Ahmed, Sarah Gailey, just too many to list. Paul Cornell started in comics, I think. So,
I think he did too, yeah.
So I've just always been wondering, like, looking at that little area going, ooh, I like comics. And yeah.
And I think some of it was, you know, I came in a little bit backwards because I was approached for a project rather than pitching directly. And so, but I also, you know, I think that if you have an agent who doesn't actually know immediately that you're fine to find, you know, someone who specifies in comics. So, you know, I think it's more of a, you know, here I have this, let's see if we can find it a home, easy for me to say, kind of thing. But this is where I say I am absolutely not an expert on this particular part of the business. Please do not take this as gospel.
No. I think the weirder the business gets, the harder it is to follow any one person's track through it. Just be open to realizing that your opportunity may come from a very weird place and you should grab it when it does. So here's a question. It's funny because as fiction writers, sometimes you write a 3,000-word short story, and sometimes you write a 7,500-word short story, and sometimes you realize your short story wants to be a novelette, and sometimes you want to write a novel, but it only gets to be 60,000, and these just happen. With comics, you got to write 24 pages.
Yes.
And how do you balance that? How do you keep that? Is it, do you work with the artist to think, okay, here's 18 pages, can you fill another six with some mood? Just was, images, yeah, was, or
that was actually for me. That was actually one of the biggest transition points. One, because I am not a writer who likes to plan things. I'm very much a write by your headlamp sort of. You know, ooh. I know just this little bit, and I'm not an outliner. You know, when I said earlier about being superstitious about talking about novels I'm working on, it is true. It's also true that the more I talk about something, the less I actually want to write it, because I've already told the story to myself. And so then I don't need to tell it anymore.
I think you might have just done a huge breakthrough for me. Because sometimes when I think about something cool, I'll think it's cool. And then, like, as I keep thinking about it, I'll think, well, that's tired. It's not an exciting idea anymore. Why should I write that? I think you're right. Oh, my gosh. I totally interrupted you. I'm sorry, but kind of made my head explode a little bit. Wow.
Yeah, it was a very strange realization for me. Comics, unfortunately for me, because I was working in IP comics, so it was somebody else's world. And at the beginning, the Sandman Universe comics were potentially going to be crossing over with each other. That was abandoned pretty quickly on, but that was originally how they started out. And so it was not just planning my own issues, but planning, okay, in issue 3, we need to be over in this person's storyline. In issue 7, we need to be over in this other person's storyline. There was a lot of planning. And that was so hard, planning the arcs, planning the issues, and then sitting down. DC, it's a 22-page script. And so sitting down and saying, I have to make 22 pages this week, and I can't make 23, and I can't make 21. I have to make 22. And so I got really good at looking at the story as, okay, here, I divided in the threes, and here's the first third, and here's this, what, you know, and just everything. And some days I would sit there and I'd be like, I have 19 and a half. Okay, what am I going to do? And just sort of bashing my head against it. Some of it was, you know, the fact that it is, you're working with an artist. And so I could be like, hey, Tom, if I'm here, how much, you know, can we switch this up and do this or more? It would be like, okay, you have 3 panels on that page. And actually what you need is 7 panels on this page. So let's, you know, spread this out. And so because he was more experienced in the medium, and also because he was much better at thinking visually than I was, clearly, since that was his job, having that, you know, was really useful. And then other than that, it was just going over and pulling strong issues of other people's comics and writers that I liked, and studying scripts and just being like very methodical about it. Okay, when do they break things up? How do they do this? How do they do that? And just trying to, you know, give myself as much of a foundation there as I could. I'm very much a, when something feels weird, go study it kind of person. And so that helped me a lot.
Interesting. Yeah, comics have a very specific, I mean, it's the pacing is key, but the pacing is also heavily controlled by the artist, so it is a collaborative effort.
Yeah, absolutely. It really feels like working with a co-writer rather than being like the director or kind of thing like that.
So is there any, without violating your superstition, is there any project that you someday want to do? Is there a folk tale or fairy tale you'd like to redo, or is there a
I definitely feel like I love the King Arthur mythos, and I've played in it a couple times, obviously with Green Knight's Wife, also with, I have a novella called Once Future that I did, but I really feel like I am not done with that particular story, and I would really like to be able to work out a good way into the Fisher King part of the Arthurian mythos. And so that's sort of my back of the brain. You should, you know, I'm not sure what I want to do with it yet, but I know there's something there that I need to work with. So
it's probably just boiling away. It'll be done in a little while. You'll find out eventually.
Let's just hope. We'll hope that. Yes.
So what are your promotional plans for Sleight of Shadows next week?
I am absolutely delighted that one of my local indies is hosting a book launch event for me. So if you are in the Twin Cities or would like to come to the Twin Cities on Tuesday, you too can be at Next Chapter Books. And I think that'll be a lot of fun. I have virtual events at both Porter Square with Mike Chen, and I think that's going to be a great in conversation. And then I have a virtual event at Gibson's, which was my local indie back when I lived in New Hampshire. So it's nice to be sort of going back to a good bookstore. So that is the schedule there. I'm doing New York science fiction reading too.
Oh, so. Cool.
Yeah.
What makes a good book event for you?
I really love to do in conversation ones where I'm there with a panel or with another author, just because I think it's fun to have somebody, you know, to talk with about books and writing and things like that. Or if the audience has good questions, that is definitely the most fun for me. So basically people who are there and people who are willing to actually talk. So that is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I find people who are engaged and someone asking you questions.
Yeah.
Just coming up with stuff to say or just reading feels boring.
And it's also, you know, as you know, this is a pretty solitary sort of, you know, career choice that we've taken on. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of the time, it's you in the page or you in the computer screen. And, you know, and so the chance to actually interact with people who have read the book or who are interested in reading the book or who would like to talk to you about, you know, writing or things like that, for me, that's rewarding because I'm like, oh, there are other people out there in the world. Isn't this nice? And then I put my misanthrope hat back on and go home at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's nice for like an hour. And then I'm like, nope, no more people, cats only. Bye.
Yep. I got my pets. I got my books. I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
Until I write another book and come out of my hobbit hole and have to see you all again. So you are also a freelance editor.
Yes. Yeah. I work with writers who have completed novel length or novella length manuscripts in a variety of genres and who are looking to sort of mostly developmental editing, who are looking to make things stronger, figure out to get feedback that is perhaps more professional than asking someone in their family or that sort of thing, or if they've done a couple rounds with a writing group and still feel like there's something missing. But again, it's a same eyes thing. It's sort of like you've read your manuscript so many times, your writing group has read your manuscript so many times, you know, you're not sure what the thing is, but you think there might be a thing that you could still work on, kind of. That's where I come in.
Well, master world builder Valerie Valdez says, Kat gave me feedback on a story and it was excellent. Highly recommended. So you've got a Clark
nice.
Award nominee advocating for Kat's editorial services. So what's your website?
You can find both information about my editing and about my books at kathowardbooks.com.
Excellent. Valerie's angry with me now. Sorry. So if you have any questions in chat for Kat Howard, thank you, Valerie, for the kathowardbooks.com.
Thank you so much.
If you have any questions, let us know. Is there anything you wanted to talk about regarding your book or your career that we didn't touch on?
No, I feel like we've hit the main points.
Okay, well, great. So you're going to be in the Twin Cities next, is it Tuesday? Is it the launch
yes.
day? Excellent.
Yep.
Yay, local bookstores.
Absolutely. Yeah. And next chapter is also the place where if people who are not going to be in the Twin Cities for some reason would like a signed copy, you can pre-order from them and I will sign and personalize there as requested and they will ship anywhere in the U.S. So.
Excellent. And we can find you at cathowardbooks.com. Oh, right. I was going to ask you about social media. I feel like this is something I need to be asking authors more because I feel like we're all kind of adrift right now. I believe today is the day where the blue check marks that you haven't paid for are going away. And
they seem to be disappearing right before I got on the show. So yes, that does seem to actually be happening this time.
Yeah, I saw that I still had mine, but several friends had no longer had theirs. So I think it's just disappearing in waves, I guess. But where do you usually hang out and how have you dealt with the challenges that we're all finding with the various upheavals and the sudden new little islands to go hang out on?
Right now, I am still on Twitter as Cat with Sword, and that is sort of my main social media still right now. I've been posting a few more cat pictures over on Instagram. Cats as in my cats, not cats as in me, on Instagram, but same handle, Cat with Sword. I like to talk about books and writing and I have an academic background. And so maybe I'll do a little bit more academic book talk over at a Substack called Epigraph to Epilogue. And, you know, now Twitter hides Substack links. So that's definitely been a very useful way of helping advertise myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I like writing the essays, so that's good. But I have not jumped to a new social media site yet because there have just been so many popping up and it seems like one will pop up and work really well for 1 week and then something weird will happen. And so then everyone goes someplace else. And I am just waiting either for Twitter to actually explode and force the choice or for there to be some clear, this is where most of everyone is going, because what I'm really trying to avoid is having to set up 3 million accounts everywhere, but it may come to that because that's the realities of freelance life at this point too, is you have to find a way to keep in touch with people and give them a way to find you. So
I know a lot more authors are leaning on Substack and newsletters. Tell us your Substack again. I'll put it in the show notes for those listening later, but
it's called Epigraph to Epilogue.
I'm writing it down.
And so, there's both a free and paid tier, and basically you get twice as many essays if you're on the paid subscription. But other than that, you know, it's still the same kind of content. And it's mostly like right now I'm doing a series on different poems and poets for National Poetry Month. And it comes out like once a week. And I'm not one of those people who has like a super active one where there's like, here's a thread for everybody and here's this discussion and here's these links, because those people are more like professional journalist people. And I'm just like, I want to talk about poems with people every so often. So.
All right. I am, there's a link in the chat for your Substack. Thank you, Valerie.
Thank
Valerie's
you.
Mad at me for her new introduction, and then she like shows up and posts all the links for me and stuff. Thank you, Valerie. I am done with my questions. Kat, you are a delight to talk to. I hope I haven't embarrassed myself because I really, really enjoyed your books, and I'm so glad to be able to talk about them with you. So if you would like to email me writing questions, mightymer@gmail.com is where you can do that. My blog show notes and where you can find links to my Substack and all the other weird social media places I try to hang out on. You can find that at merverse.com. And if you want to hang out with people and talk writing live on Twitch, that's Tuesday, Thursday, twitch.tv/mightymer, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. My new book, Station Eternity, is out, and you can pre-order Chaos Terminal, coming out this November. And I think that's it. Kat Howard, you've been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. Doctor.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.